and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette on this Friday, March 8th. I'm your reader, Wally Helms. On the front page, we look at the picture, large picture, featuring the story headlined City View High School's Soil Expo Boosts Project-Based Learning. This is reported by Grace King of the Gazette. And I'll just describe the picture first. I'll read the caption. It says, City View freshman Lorelei Slater instructs Pam Carvey and Claudia Schultz as they plant lavender seeds during a Thursday presentation about conservation agriculture for the Soil Expo Fighting Climate Change Underground at City View High School in Cedar Rapids. Visions to the expo learned about ways to combat climate change. And below there's another picture of two young women, and it says, Lorelei Slater watches as Claudia Schultz waters lavender seeds she planted. The picture's taken by Jim Slosiarik of the Gazette. And so, as Grace King has reported from Cedar Rapids, City View Community High School freshman Lorelei Slater helped guests plant lavender, cabbage, or sweet pea seeds into degradable planters as a way to teach them how soil conservation can slow down and even reverse the effects of climate change. Slater, 15, and the other members of her group, Jack Stolmunks, 15, and Jalen Tetrell, 14, both freshmen, were putting their knowledge into practice Thursday morning at City View's Soil Expo, Fighting Climate Change Underground. As part of their science and language arts classes, teams of students researched different ways soil can naturally fight climate change in eastern Iowa and became experts for the expo. 40 high school freshmen were put into 14 groups that participated in the expo, inviting the community, their families, and peers to learn more about how to combat climate change through the soil. This is how City View Community High School, a new project-based school in the Cedar Rapids Community School District that launched in August, is engaging students in learning. Students are learning by applying their knowledge to real-world problems in Cedar Rapids and creating solutions. It's not just for grades, Slater said. It's fun to be able to have an experience. It's experience-based learning more than other grade-based learning. Of course, we're encouraged to get good grades, but we get to pick our interests as well. For this experience, Thursday, students researched, analyzed text, engaged in discussion, learned how to write professional emails, and applied all this knowledge to a final project. Angeline Tro and Precious Howard, both 15, and freshmen at City View, researched composting for their Soil Expo project. During the expo, they shared how people can start their own composting journey. At City View, I think I'm learning more about real-life stuff, Howard said. Other students presented on silvopasture, the deliberate integration of trees and grazing livestock to manage woodland pasture, green roofs, which adds vegetation to a roof to reduce building energy by providing shading and insulation, and creating a new habitat for plants and animals, such as birds and insects, and the benefits of a plant-rich diet and reducing animal consumption. The things they're gaining from these experiences are indestructible, said Lise Deutsch, an English language arts teacher at City View who guided students through the Soil Expo projects. There's been a lot of building and planning and putting all the pieces together. It's been fantastic, very creative. What we have done is show students how English language arts standards apply to more than just the English classroom, Deutsch said. Deutsch and a few other City View teachers visited a school in Seattle, Washington earlier this year that has been using the project-based learning model since 2016. One of the educators there told Deutsch that project-based learning model ensures students have resumes at the end of high school, and that took me until my mid-late 20s to develop. How articulate and confident the students were there was impressive, Deutsch said. City View science teacher Ann Jameson said the educators at City View have been building the plane as we fly it. Students have a lot of choice in how they learn and apply their learning. We've had some really cool ideas, she said. This project is an example of students meeting learning objectives in ninth grade science and language arts by learning from experts in the field in Iowa and interacting with the community to show how they understand what they've learned, said City View Principal Dan DeVore. It's one of many examples of community-based, contextualized learning, DeVore said. Students engage every afternoon in team-based projects that solve real problems in our community. The school is located at the heart of downtown Cedar Rapids on the first floor of the Metro Economic Alliance, 501 First Street Southeast. Staff at the Alliance occupy the second floor, while some classes meet in rooms that resemble boardrooms more than traditional classrooms. Students mostly use tables in the open concept office. In researching for the Soil Expo, students reached out to experts in the community to learn what is happening in Iowa. One of these experts is Haley Sandberg, Linn County Director of the Iowa State Extension and Outreach. Working with the students at City View has been a pleasure, Sandberg said. They are excited and energetic. Ask great questions and have great ideas, big ideas. So much of the project-based learning that they are doing have a direct connection to the work we do at Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, and we are so glad they reached out to partner with us. Another group of students researching forest conservation reached out to Mark Vitosh, a district forester with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Vitosh said he met with City View students for about 30 minutes while they asked him questions related to the 2020 derecho, the impact of drought on forests, and how trees help combat climate change. Vitosh said it's always great when students reach out wanting to learn more about their community. It will help them as consumers in the future and may encourage them to consider a different career. I would like to see more and more of it, he said. The school has adapted to the needs of its students and staff since it launched in August. They learned that the model requires a small learning environment to ensure every student masters the core skills and content knowledge and can authentically apply these skills in community contexts, DeVore said. Enrollment into City View has dropped from 110 students to 74 students since the beginning of the school year. 9 students were accepted into the school but never registered. 11 left before the end of the semester, and another 16 left at the end of the semester, DeVore said. The majority of the students that left City View transferred to another high school in the Cedar Rapids Community School District. Students left or were encouraged to leave for not attending, missing their friends at the larger high school, seeking more traditional experiences and opportunities, and struggling to understand the project-based learning model, DeVore said. DeVore said he anticipates a total enrollment of 150 students for the 2024-25 school year, including 75 school lottery spots, a randomized selection process for determining which students will attend. Students interested in attending City View next year can reach out to school leaders at 319-558-2093. There will be 2 big refinements to students' experience next year as educators continue to learn how best to deliver the project-based learning model, DeVore said. Students will be offered opportunities for internships to push students to find their passion areas and work on authentic community issues, DeVore said. The school also will build on their advisory program to ensure every student is connected at school. At the bottom of the front page, we have a story by Vanessa Miller. The headline, Regents Respond to Lawmaker Questions. The sweeping proposal to restructure Iowa's Board of Regents, amend its powers, and impose new mandates on public universities includes a stipulation requiring the board to respond in a timely manner to any request for information from any lawmaker or the governor. So far this year, the only lawmaker who sought information from the board has been Representative Taylor Collins, Republican of Minneapolis, who's posed 5 questions all tied in some way to bills he's co-sponsored or concerns lawmakers have raised involving the region's and Iowa's public universities. On January 22nd, Collins asked a Regent lobbyist what the university's social work programs were teaching on how to get clients off public assistance, according to public records requested and provided to the Gazette. On January 26, Collins, again through a Regent lobbyist, requested board rules on qualifying for in-state tuition and asked how many illegal immigrants each university has and how we handle tuition for them. On February 8, Collins requested the university's policies on dealing with civil unrest on campus and also on post-tenure review for faculty. The Regents offered same-day responses to those inquiries, including links to policies and manuals, along with follow-up attachments summarizing, for example, their campus's social work criteria. Our students have been trained to help clients connect with relevant services, be it vocational training, educational programs, job placement assistance, and mental health support, to become self-sufficient and move off public assistance, according to a University of Iowa response to the social work question. Our students obtain these skills through classroom lectures and first-hand experience in a social service agency via a field placement. The University of Northern Iowa similarly reported, "Our overarching commitment and core value is to help individuals and families live self-sufficient and fulfilling lives. Our programs build skills that future social workers can use to help clients move off of public assistance." Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds last year signed into law Senate File 494 that places new limits on public assistance for low-income Iowans seeking help with food, health care costs. Among other things, it denied food aid to households with assets over $15,000 and required the state to use a real-time eligibility verification system for all its public programs. This session, Collins, a graduate of Iowa State University with a master's degree in public administration from Drake University, is among a group of Republican representatives sponsoring House File 2558. The bill would impose new restrictions on the Board of Regents, including limiting its ability to raise tuition, curtailing diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, and letting university presidents initiate a post-tenure reviews of any faculty member at any time. Collins' name also is on a House File 2320 to make undocumented immigrants ineligible for state in-state tuition and public assistance programs. In response to Collins' question about how many illegal immigrants each university has enrolled and how it handles their tuition, the board responded, "There is no data. We are unable to provide this information given we are not able to identify this population of students," according to the board's collective response. Earlier this year, in response to questions from the Gazette, UI officials said the campus doesn't require proof of citizenship for residency classification. To qualify as a resident undergraduate, the university looks at a student's graduating high school and permanent address, according to the UI Office of Strategic Communication. Regent policy assigns the duty of classifying students as residents and non-residents to the individual universities. Per existing state law, anyone granted refugee or asylum status should receive resident status. An alien who has immigrant status establishes Iowa residency in the same manner as a United States citizen, according to Iowa law. Regarding Collins' question on tenure review, each university shared a summary of how their tenured professors, which have been shrinking in number, face both annual reviews and peer reviews every 5, 6, or 7 years, depending on the campus. The UI peer review comes every 5 years, UNI's every 6 years, and ISU's professors undergo a post-tenure review at least every 7 years. If during the review of a tenured faculty member, there is the conclusion that deficiencies in teaching, scholarship, or service are noted, the faculty member, along with their unit head, develops a process improvement plan that includes expectations and milestones for achievement, according to the UI tenure summary. The plan is then reviewed on a regular basis. If expectations are not met, the tenured faculty member may be subject to formal action under the faculty dispute procedures. Tenured professors across all three campuses can face an escalating series of sanctions and remediation for unacceptable performance, including termination. That article, again, was reported by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette. And staying on the front page, we have a story on the right side column. It's reported by Tom Barton and Marissa Payne. And it's the headline, Bill Would Ban Citizen Police Review Boards. State lawmakers this week advanced a bill that would dismantle citizen review boards that probe alleged police misconduct, such as those established in Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Coralville, University Heights, and Dubuque. Senate File 2325 would make changes to city civil service commissions that oversee the testing, hiring, promotion, and discipline for police officers, firefighters, and other civil service positions. The bill passed the Senate 37-9 after being amended to insert a provision that states a city with a civil service commission shall not adopt, enforce, or otherwise administer or establish a board or other entity for the purpose of citizen review of the conduct of police officers. Skyler Limkerman, an attorney for the Iowa Fraternal Order of Police, said the bill aims to improve due process in disciplinary hearings for civil service employees, including police and firefighters, by incorporating case law and clarifying procedures. The group represents about 2,000 of the roughly 7,000 law enforcement officers in the state. Limkerman, who represented a former Cedar Rapids police officer who unsuccessfully appealed his firing for being dishonest about 2016 traffic stop and violating department policies, said the bill aims to standardize the civilian review process for law enforcement in Iowa. What this bill does is it says we already have a civil service commission process here in the state of Iowa. We do not need a civilian review process, Linkman told members of the House subcommittee that advanced the bill Thursday. Additionally, Iowa law does not provide regulations for how civilian review boards operate. As a result, each of the communities that has one has adopted different processes and purposes for their police review board, Linkman said. Unfortunately, what we've seen really since 2019 and 2020 is just a continual attack of our law enforcement officers by some of the civilian review boards, he said. He didn't cite any specific incident where a board's review has escalated to the point of officers receiving additional consequences. Representatives for the Iowa League of Cities and the cities of Iowa City, Coralville, Des Moines, and Cedar Falls expressed concerns to lawmakers about eliminating citizen review boards, even if their city does have them in place, citing their role in increasing transparency and accountability. Kelly Paschke, representing the Iowa Peace Officers Association, argued that the civil service system is broken and stacked against police officers, saying they often face political interference and lack of due process. Employees appealing disciplinary decisions before a civil service commission would be allowed to request the production of documents and depose witnesses. The bill states a civil service employee could be removed, discharged, demoted, or suspended only with just cause and upon a finding by a preponderance of evidence. They violated the law, city rules, or policies, or is physically or mentally unfit. Senator Scott Webster, a Republican from Bettendorf, during Senate floor debate, criticized past discussions about policing policy by Iowa City's Community Police Review Board. Webster also asserted citizen review boards, quote, give no due process to a police officer at all, unquote. The Iowa City Community Police Review Board, as according to city code, quote, has no power to review police officer personnel records or disciplinary matters, unquote, and, quote, has only limited civil administrative review powers and has no power or authority over criminal matters, unquote. Webster also said the legislation is needed to defend law enforcement from political interventions by citizen review boards and the media frenzy that goes along with them. Today, we send a clear message to the brave men and women who put on their uniform every day and stand on the thin blue line. We have their back. We stand with them. We respect them, Webster said. Senator Janice Wiener, a Democrat who represents Iowa City, took umbrage with Webster's comments about Iowa City's board and defended it when she spoke on the Senate floor the next day. As for our Community Police Review Board, facts are superior, are super helpful. They've helped build relations within the community, Wiener said. They're citizens who, in some cases, may have had difficult relations with police in the past and want to improve them, citizens who just want to be part of the process, as well as others who have experience with policing. In Cedar Rapids, the Citizen Review Board is focused on public engagement and improving community police relations, advising the city on police department policies and practices, reviewing citizen complaints, and serving on the committee that hires the police chief, a process the city just recently completed. The board was created in 2021 after racial justice advocates led by the nonprofit Advocates for Social Justice pushed for stronger civilian oversight of local law enforcement after George Floyd's murder by Minneapolis police in 2020 as one of seven demands for reform. But the board itself doesn't have disciplinary authority over officers. When the city receives a complaint against an officer, the police department's professional standards unit conducts an investigation and delivers findings to the police chief, who then reviews that report and may request additional information. Afterward, the chief provides a report to the board, which may provide its own report to the city council if a board majority disagrees with the chief's findings. Under the ordinance, detailed written findings of fact and evidence concerning the board, but identifying information such as faces or names of witnesses, officers, and victims, are edited out of the materials. Representative Eric Gurdy, a Democrat and Cedar Rapids police officer, said there's merit in changing civil service procedures to ensure every civil service employee has due process, but objects to eliminating citizen police review boards. This comes back to, in my opinion, a local control issue, Gertz said, told the Gazette. I think the Cedar Rapids Police Department, the City of Cedar Rapids, and Cedar Rapids Police Review Board has a positive relationship and should be able to continue. In a statement, the Advocates for Social Justice Board urged the community to call state representatives and ask they vote no on the bill. The advocates say the Cedar Rapids City Council's approval of the board affirmed its role in strengthening community police relations and law enforcement accountability. Senate File 2325 is yet another example of our state legislature trying to silence the black, brown, and other marginalized voices of the citizens of Iowa, the group said. After all the protests, community forums, and negotiations, it is disgusting, heartbreaking, and telling that we are still having to navigate repeated attacks and setbacks. ASJ affirms that the state's action to ban citizen review boards is an act of white supremacy and one that is intentional act to uphold violent and racist systems in our state, all while undermining local agency. Representative Sammy Sheets, Democrat, Cedar Rapids, said House Democrats plan to offer amendments to preserve and protect the existence and operation of citizen review boards across Iowa. While I recognize the support many aspects of the civil service bill provide necessary protections for public service sector workers, eliminating the police review boards undermines the progress we have made in establishing crucial platforms for dialogue, accountability, and reform within our policing system, she said. The presence of citizen review boards has proved to be an invaluable asset in building trust and fostering a constructive relationship between law enforcement agencies and the communities they serve. The bill now heads to the full House Local Government Committee for consideration and passage before a March 15th legislative deadline. A note at the end says, Aaron Murphy of the Gazette, Des Moines Bureau, contributed to this report. And we turn to the Insight page for the Gazette's editorial, reflecting on that previous article. Its headline, Review Boards Are in Jeopardy. A bill approved this week by the Iowa Senate, making changes to local civil service investigations, would also eliminate citizen police review boards. Under the bill, Senate File 2325, no city with a civil service commission would be allowed to establish a board or other entity for the purpose of citizen review of the conduct of police officers. The bill would put the future of review boards in Iowa City, established in the late 1990s, and in Cedar Rapids, established in 2021, in jeopardy. During floor debate, Senator Janice Wiener, Democrat, Iowa City, said the review board language was a late addition to the bill. It passed 37-9, with several Democrats voting in favor due to union support for other provisions in the bill. Wiener was not among them. I don't think it's the role of this body to take away local control and strip communities that already have them of the citizen police review boards, Wiener said during debate. So why get rid of review boards? After listening to the bill's floor manager, Senator Scott Webster, Republican of Bettendorf, it seems the motivation is pure partisan politics. It wasn't that long ago we heard from the far left that we needed to defund police officers, said Webster, who added that an unnamed Iowa City Democrat wanted to cut the police budget. Colleagues, today we're going to defend our law enforcement from a political interventions by citizen review boards and the media frenzy that goes along with them, Webster said, arguing that media frenzy ignores the truth and facts. At the risk of being frenzied, we see citizen review boards as a needed tool allowing public oversight of public employees, and the fact is, in Cedar Rapids, the review board was painstakingly created in the wake of the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police and the protests that followed. Cedar Rapids board is the product of cooperation between the police, city officials, and advocates for social justice, which led peaceful protests in the city. When Webster argued on the Senate floor that review boards don't provide due process and don't protect confidential information, it's clear he has no familiarity with Cedar Rapids Review Board and its procedures. Scoring political points is not more important than giving citizens a critical role in oversight. The House should scrap this latest shot at local control. And that's the Gazette editorial for today. I'll return to more on the Insight page later on. But right now, you are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette on this Friday, March 8th. I'm your reader. Well, this is on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. We only have one regular obituary, and it's from Toledo, and it's Geraldine Jerry Campbell. Geraldine and Jerry are spelled with a G. Geraldine Jerry Campbell, 91, of Toledo, passed away Tuesday, March 5th, at Simpson Memorial Home in West Liberty, under the care of Iowa City Hospice. A massive Christian burial will be held Monday, March 11th, at 10:30 a.m. St. Patrick Catholic Church in Tama. Interment will follow at Woodlawn Cemetery in Toledo. Visitation Sunday, March 10th, 4 to 7 p.m. at Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, with a rosary beginning at 10:30 p.m. And we have five shorter other notices. From Cedar Rapids, Nelson G. Hallahan, 76, died Tuesday, March 5th, Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Also from Cedar Rapids, John Dean Inskeep, 89, died Wednesday, March 6th, Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Also from Cedar Rapids, Lauren Carl Jenkins, 77, died Wednesday, March 6th, Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service. From Hopkinton, Donald Digman, 88, died Wednesday, March 6th, Getch Funeral Home, Monticello. And from Vinton, Shirley Hummel, 88, died Thursday, March 7th, Phillips Funeral Home. That concludes the obituaries in today's edition. And looking at the sports page, we have a couple of boys high school basketball tournament stories. The first is in Class 4A, reported by Jeff Johnson. Kennedy earns title shot. Their warm-up jersey tops show a metropolitan skyline with the words Cedar Rapids under that logo. Kennedy boys basketball team will be playing a state championship game for its city tonight. A crazy good first quarter propelled the number one Cougars to a not as close as it seemed 63-51 win over number 8 Ankeny in a Class 4A semifinal last night at Wells Fargo Arena. Kennedy, now 25-0, takes on either number 2 West Des Moines Valley or unranked Bettendorf in tonight's title game at 7 p.m. Those teams played a semifinal late last night. The last Metro winner was Cedar Rapids Xavier, which took back-to-back 3A championships in 2016 and 2017. The last 4A champion from the Metro was Linmar in 2011. The last public school representing Cedar Rapids to win it all was Prairie in 1998. The last championship for a school in the Cedar Rapids Community School District was Kennedy in 1984. Micah Aslaik owned the first half offensive for Kennedy, then tagged in teammate Cyrus Courtney for the second. Both finished with a team-best 17 points. Slack, I'll spell his last name, S-C-H-L-A-A-K, Slack had all 17 of his in the first half. 13 in a first quarter that saw Kennedy ride to what turned out to be an insurmountable 27-10 lead. Courtney had 11 of his points in the third quarter. Kennedy has shown the ability to go on massive offensive runs this season, and the opening period fit that bill. While the Cougars struggled offensively at times in their quarterfinal win over Dallas center Grimes, they made 11 of 16 shots from the field, a 15-0 run, taking them from 5-2 down to a 17-5 ahead. Ankeny got going in the second quarter, specifically Ankeny's Rio Aguirre not going, the sophomores hitting three key trays at a free throw. A three-pointer by Rio's senior brother, Leo, brought the Hawks within 8 points, with a slack putback giving Kennedy a 39-29 halftime edge. Slack finished with 17 first-half points. Kennedy did a marvelous job defensively on Ankeny star Carson Johnson in the game. Class 4A's leading scorer had just 9 points on 4 of 13 shooting. There is a picture of an action of them in action, and I'll read the caption. Ankeny's Carson Johnson is surrounded by Cedar Rapids Kennedy's Trayvon Crumry, Joseph Bean, and Trey McCowan during the first half of a Class 4A boys state basketball semifinal last night at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. And the picture is taken by Jim Sosiarik of the Gazette. And the second story is reported by Jeff Johnson. Decorah's season ends in overtime. Decorah basketball is a thing now. So before looking at how excruciating the end of the 2023-24 season was, think about that for a good second, quick second. This senior group, what we've done, I think we've proven a lot to a lot of the kids down in our program that it's possible, Decorah's Trey McCain said, after his top-ranked Vikings lost 61-53 in overtime Thursday to Davenport Assumption in a state tournament semifinal. It being more success, more trips to Wells Fargo Arena, the possibility of perhaps winning it all someday. These guys have shown the way. They're all my brothers, said Decorah's Ben Bachman. Decorah came here 2 years ago for the first time in 45 years. It came back here this week ranked number one, the most successful team in school history. It beat Williamsburg in Tuesday's quarterfinals for the program's first state tournament win. McCain, Brockman, and the three other seniors on this team will be enormously difficult to replace. But there's talent in the younger classes and obviously a lot of momentum. I think if our program keeps building on this, there are good things ahead, McCain said. Now to this always tight game. A pair of three-pointers from McCain and another from Bachman were fighting lightning bolts that put Decorah ahead with 2 minutes left, 46-42. The Vikings then got a defensive stop and the ball, but a pair of turnovers gave Assumption, now 18-8, a chance, and a free throw and Damian Jackson Trey later, the game was suddenly tied. Decorah got the last shot in regulation, but Zach Driscoll's drive down the left side of the lane missed, perhaps slightly deflected by Assumption. Nothing went well in overtime for Decorah, which finished at 23-3. They were exhausted. We were exhausted, said Jackson, who had a game-high 23 points. But we had to play with the same confidence we had all game, those last 2 minutes of overtime. Just one of those situations where they went on the last run, said Decorah coach Jonathan Carlson. Give them credit. Assumption's length and athleticism led to Decorah struggling offensively throughout. The Vikings ended up shooting just 32.2% from the field, and leading scorer Bachman, a 20-point-per-game guy, held to 10 points on 3 of 14 shooting. McCain made 4 threes and scored 18 points to help make up for that, but Decorah didn't have much answer for guard Jackson or forward Kavion Hodges, part of an all-underclassmen lineup, who posted a double-double of 20 points and 13 rebounds. You get it to overtime, you wish you could pull it out, McCain said. You're with your guys here. You work all season to get here. It's just a tough way to lose. Obviously, these guys, I feel terrible for them, Carlson said. It's just one of those deals where that's what it is. They left their hearts on the floor, and that's all we can ask. And there are several pictures accompanying the article. I'll read the captions. Decorah's Zachary Driscoll is consoled by Davenport Assumption's Damian Jackson after their Class 3A boys state basketball semifinal Thursday at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. Decorah lost 61-53 in overtime. Jim Saucy-Arc is the photographer for these pictures. Decorah's Matthew Bachman is called for a foul after colliding with Davenport Assumption's Kavion Hodges during the first half at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. And the third picture, Decorah's Trey McCain reacts after sinking a tray during overtime at Wells Fargo Arena. Decorah fell to Davenport Assumption 61-53. Turning back to the Insight page, we pick up a guest column by Skylar Snakenberg, a social studies teacher who lives in Wellman. And his guest column is titled, Civics Engagement Should Be Encouraged. The teaching of American civics in our schools faces a grave new risk. Proponents of programs such as Action Civics seek to turn the traditional subject of civics into a recruitment tool of the progressive left. So begins the open letter of the Conservative Civics Alliance, which has served as the framework for proposed changes to the Iowa Social Studies curriculum. I have no problem with any political party or associated institutions sharing their vision for the United States. They are simply participating in the democratic process and embracing the rights afforded to them by the First Amendment. I do, however, take exception when such groups seek to limit the exercise of constitutional rights by those who oppose their position. Democracy cannot function without civic engagement. In fact, democracy dies when the voices of citizens go silent. So why is the state of Iowa adopting a curriculum that would suspend the teaching of civic engagement? How can we teach the exemplary and praiseworthy history of the United States and leave out the instruction of the foundational element that made the very history possible? Civic engagement is not only the key to understanding our past, but to unlocking our future. Change cannot happen with the American public sitting idly by. Civic engagement is why we have the strongest military in the world. It is the reason we have become a beacon of freedom to the rest of the world. The list of influential citizens who have been selected for instruction by the new curriculum, ranging from George Washington to Will Rogers to Elizabeth Cady Stanton, all made an impact because they were civically engaged. It is almost cruel to show children how others struggled in the pursuit of freedom while blinding them to the impact they can make themselves. The most impactful experiences I have had as a citizen and educator have involved civic engagement. Acting merely as a facilitator, I encouraged my 3 sociology students to create a project that would benefit their community, state, or nation. They decided to invite political candidates to our school. Through their efforts, Senator Rick Santorum and Hillary Clinton made stops in Kyoto in the run-up to the 2016 Iowa caucuses. At a more micro level, in the lead-up to Memorial Day each year, I would take my classes to the local cemetery to place American flags by the headstones of our local veterans. This provided a wonderful opportunity to get students engaged in their community and teach about the sacrifices that have been made for our nation. I have organized students to collect tattered American flags and partnered with the local American Legion to ceremonially retire and dispose of the flags. Civic engagement should not be villainized. It should be encouraged. We cannot let our fears blind us to our civic duties. I firmly believe, practice, and have observed social studies instructors promoting civic engagement without advancing some sinister agenda. Want to increase patriotism and promote democracy? Encourage kids to vote, run for office, or enlist. This encourages the future of our nation. That was a guest column submitted by Skylar Sneckenberg, a social studies teacher who lives in Wellman. And still on the Insight page, there is one community letter submitted by David Mansheim of Parkersburg, and it's titled, "Did Our Legislature Sleep Through Civics Class?" Todd Dorman's March 3 column, "Letting Lawmakers Write History is a Mistake," reminded me of teaching civics to Iowa high school seniors in 1969. For the first Earth Day, a few students sampled river water from different sites and took them to the chemistry lab to determine the sedimentation and pollution levels. Others took pictures of the sewer discharge pipes and smokestacks. They presented this at an all-school assembly that local state legislators attended. Later, I gave a course assignment to write a letter to the editor or any politician about any issue that concerned them. They were to be graded on the clarity of their argument, their factual sources, and their composition. Mailing them was their own choice, and some did. The late 1960s was an era of political polarization much like today. Prompted by the local state senator, an investigation of me was started by the Division of Criminal Investigation for my supposed radicalization of my students. Encouraging civic participation is now called Action Civics. The Iowa House passed a bill to ban it. It is the legislature that wants to indoctrinate students with political views by rewriting history and requiring students to view anti-abortion films. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Socrates was forced to drink hemlock and die for subverting the nation's youth, as claimed by the reactionaries of his time, or, as I would say, teaching students to think. Has humanity made any actual progress if this is still a crime? That was the letter submitted by David Mansheim of Parkersburg. On page 3A, we have a large color picture that has the headline, Donning the Badge, Cedar Rapids Police Honor New Chief David Dostal in Pinning Ceremony. And the caption reads, Nolan Dostal watches as his mother, Melissa Dostal, hugs her husband and newly appointed Cedar Rapids Police Chief David Dostal after pinning on his new badge during a pinning ceremony Thursday at City Hall in Cedar Rapids. Dostal, 56, was appointed last month as police chief. More photos can be viewed at the Gazette's website. The picture is taken by Savannah Blake of the Gazette. Just below that picture, we have a story by Kaylin McCain of the Southeast Iowa Union, and it's from Washington, Iowa, and the headline, Washington County Ambulance Director Departs. After 16 months on paid leave, Washington County Ambulance Director Jeremy Peck was removed from the county's payroll Tuesday morning in a unanimous vote by county supervisors without discussion. Peck was placed on a one-month unpaid leave in October 2022 and ordered to undergo human resources training. But on November 1 of that year, he was instead placed on paid leave pending investigation of an unspecified issue, which county officials remain unwilling to disclose. Since then, the county has continued to pay Peck's $135,000 salary and benefits based on budget documents acquired by the Southeast Iowa Union. Washington County supervisors and Peck all declined to comment on Peck's departure. Peck was hired in 2020 and oversaw the service's transition from a private to county-run entity. He started a basic life support crew to grapple with paramedic shortages and boosted the ambulance service's revenue through non-emergency transfer calls. The circumstances surrounding his suspension and now termination remain unclear. In late 2022, most employees of the Washington County Ambulance Service signed a letter calling for a vote of no confidence against Peck. Paramedic Mike Friel read it aloud during a Washington County Supervisors meeting where he claimed the director had created a work environment that was highly toxic with a complete lack of transparency and accountability that left employees afraid of workplace retaliation. Since that day, supervisors have held at least 8 closed sessions in order to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation or where litigation is imminent. While the specific content of those sessions remains unknown, several happened at meetings attended by representatives from Hopkins and Huebner, a consultant the county hired in 2022, to provide legal advice on employment issues at the ambulance department, according to meeting minutes. The Southeast Iowa Union newspaper filed public record requests on February 27 and March 5, seeking copies of any mediation agreements, legal settlement records, documents indicating a reason for Peck's resignation or termination, and legally required communications between the former ambulance director and other staff. County Attorney Nathan Rep said in response the county had no disclosure records but said any potential settlement agreements as requested would be public once that settlement agreement was finalized. Additionally, 3 ambulance department staff members, speaking on the condition of anonymity, told the newspaper the agency was currently under investigation by state and federal officials for its documentation practices during Peck's tenure. In total, just over 500 days passed between the county's first attempt to suspend Peck as its ambulance director and ending his employment. Board of Supervisors Chair Richard Young declined to comment at length, but said the delay was largely attributable to Iowa's Back the Blue Act, passed by the Iowa legislature in 2021. That law amended Chapter 80F of the state code with provisions that added legal protections for police officers, firefighters, emergency medical technicians, and other emergency response professionals. Young said the county would start moving to select a new director as soon as possible, but said he expected the process to take several months. "We'll have to advertise and do interviews, all that stuff," he said. "I would like to see it advertised nationally, not just locally, so we can get the best candidate for Washington County." Since December, Katrina Altenhofen has served as the interim director of ambulance service, doing double duty between that role and her job as the head of hospice of Washington County. Others have reported struggles, however, to grapple with the ongoing uncertainty about the county agency's long-term boss. The Washington County EMS Advisory Council's 2023 and 2024 annual reports issued only one recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, asking them to provide the Washington County Ambulance Service with consistent, permanent leadership, structure, and support. There are a couple of pictures of those mentioned in the article, Jeremy Peck and Richard Young. And concluding with a top weather story by meteorologist Jan Ryan, drought update. This week's drought monitor, released yesterday morning, shows further expansion of extreme drought. Much of eastern Iowa is now included in this, with over 20% of the state classified as extreme, and over 56% of the state classified as in severe drought. Less than 1% of Iowa is drought-free. It's important to note that this does not include any rain from yesterday or today. That said, the drought continues in eastern Iowa are well entrenched. In fact, the state has not been entirely drought-free since May 2020. Since then, we have been over 3 feet under on precipitation. It will take several rounds of above-average precipitation to overcome this. Unfortunately, rainfall remains limited in both the short and long-term forecast. And that was the top weather story by meteorologist Jan Ryard. His last name is spelled R-Y-H-E-R-D. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette on this Friday, March 8th. I'm your reader, Wally Helms. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.